Well, hey everyone, last Sunday before the Super Bowl, I saw an interview with this guy. His name is Oliver Owens, and he works for Merrill Lynch. About 20 years ago, he was the supervisor to a young college intern who wanted to learn the insurance industry because he wasn't sure that his aspirations to play in the NFL would work out. His young intern's name was Tom Brady. Now, Owens really thought that Brady had a future in finance, and he said this quote. He said, "Tom, as an NFL quarterback, you're a dime a dozen. You're a clipboard holder." The notorious job of a backup quarterback. You have to start a career, and so I'll write you a nice referral. Well, in 2000, Tom Brady was drafted in the sixth round with a throwaway pick, and today, almost 20 years later, Brady has an NFL record, 6 Super Bowl wins to his name. Now, listen, I know there are plenty of Patriot haters here, so I use this illustration with some trepidation. But set aside that for just a moment, and as I make my point here, Tom Brady knew that there was a bigger dream inside of him than being a Merrill Lynch finance agent. And imagine if he had said to Oliver Owens, "Yeah, you're right. You know, that NFL thing is just a pipe dream. How about you write me that recommendation?" I mean, imagine if Brady would have gone to his grave with that dream inside of him, unpursued. Now listen. I think this story can be a kind of wake-up call for some Christians in the church today who are made for more than the life they're settling for. You know, somewhere along the way, you let someone talk you into the idea that you're just a proverbial clipboard holder. You've settled into a humdrum routine that has consumed your time and deadened your senses, and you stop dreaming about the more that you were made for. As a kid, your imagination ran wild about the future and the what-ifs and the could-be's. Some had dreams of a wedding day or a family or a career or your life's purpose. But as you've gotten older, you've been bogged down in the responsibilities of life and you've settled for just living a mundane day-to-day existence with no focus and no purpose. Your dreams of what could be have faded. So I pray that if you're a person today who is settling for less than God's best for your life, that something will be shaken in you over these next 3 weeks during this series called Made for More. I think every person needs a dream from God. In fact, I'd go one step further and say that if you're not dreaming, you're dying. God didn't create you to live in mediocrity. Instead, He's given you gifts and skills and passions and experiences and purposes that were meant to be explored and unleashed. As Erin McManus said, you were created by God as an original, but tragically, many of us will die as copies. And if you're a Christian, listen, the moment that you met Jesus Christ, something came alive in you. Imagination that was lost comes to life. Dreams that have faded now shine. Purpose that was black and white now shows up in color. And so the question for this month is this: will you let the Holy Spirit liberate the dreams that God put inside of you? You were made for more. And over the next 3 weeks, we want to help some of you begin to explore the more that you are made for. Now, this is not self-help crap, okay? In self-help, it's always about you. It's about your self-esteem and your financial security and your success. And here's the problem with all of that. It's not about you. It's about Christ. It's about His glory and His kingdom. But you have a part to play in His story, and so you need to get in touch with what is God's dream for your life. Now, some of you are rolling your eyes saying, you know, well, this one isn't for me. All this talk of big dreams. I'm just a normal person trying to eke out a normal life. I'm not going to be the one to start some Fortune 500 company or the next great nonprofit or come up with some ministry idea that's going to change the church or change the city. That may be for some people, but that's not what I'm talking about. You see, I think we're all dreamers at heart. And the title of my message today is Dream Bigger. This doesn't mean you have to come up with some brand new world-changing idea or entrepreneurial marvel. No, I would challenge you to just start with any areas of your life where you've become comfortable. You may be comfortable in your current parenting mode, but God's tapping you on the shoulder saying, dream bigger. What would it take to be a great parent and not a just get by parent? Or maybe you're comfortable in your current role at work and God comes along and says, dream bigger. What would it look like to do this job with purpose and passion and mission? And what if instead of just trying to keep your head above water in school, God is tapping you on the shoulder saying, you know, what if you could influence your friend group for me? You see, God always has more for you than you think that He has. And I'm convinced that there's no such thing as a great person. There are just ordinary people who have given themselves to great dreams. So I'm going to be honest with you. Some of you are living a boring life. You're comfortable. There's no passion left. You don't feel purpose about anything. And Jesus came into that and he said, if you truly follow me, you're going to have an abundant life. And so have you considered that maybe God wants you to dream bigger beyond your safe comfort? Remember, we only get one shot at this life. This isn't a dress rehearsal. So I want us to look today at a biblical hero whom God challenged to dream bigger. And this man found the key to unlocking that bigger dream that God had for his life. We'll discover that key together in just a moment. So would you open your Bibles, please, or your devices to Hebrews chapter 11. And let me set the scene, because as we've been learning, this is a letter. And in a letter, context is king, remember. And so as you're getting there, let me give you a little bit of context. We're not sure who wrote Hebrews. It's the only letter where there's some mystery about the author. My best guess is Barnabas wrote it, but it could be Apollos, it could be Luke. But it was most likely written to some house churches in Rome who had fallen on hard times. And some people, some Christians in those churches seemed to be surrendering to the pressure to leave their Christian faith and to return to the old law, specifically to Judaism. And so for the first 9 chapters of Hebrews, the author's trying to convince these Christians not to fall back into the old laws and Judaism. And he does this by laying out how Jesus is greater than everything in the old covenant. All the old ways of trying to get to God, Jesus is greater. And so Jesus is superior in chapter 1 to the old covenant. He's greater than the angels. And then in chapter 3, he's greater than Moses and the law. In chapter 4, he's greater than the old priesthood. In chapter 8, he's greater than the temple. In chapter 9, he's greater than the Ark of the Covenant. You get the point. And woven in through these chapters are some of the strongest warnings in the Bible about Christians who fall away. And so for 9 chapters, the case has been building about how Jesus is superior to everything. And then chapter 10 comes and begins the practical part of the letter. He's done with the theoretical side, and now it becomes very practical about how we should live our lives. And so when we hit chapter 11, we're presented with a laundry list of people who have exhibited the key ingredient for following Jesus and the key to standing firm in your Christian beliefs when the chips are down and the key to unlocking the dreams that God put inside of you. And here's that key. The key is faith. This chapter has been called the Hall of Faith. You see, when Jesus is greater than everything else in your life, you can step into bigger dreams because you have a bigger faith. So I want to read some of Hebrews 11 with you. We're going to start in verse 1 with a definition. Listen to this. He says, now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for and the conviction of things not seen. So we need to stop right here for a moment and ponder this. Today, when people use the word faith, it's often paired with other words like blind or leap of. And notice that's not at all what the author of Hebrews seems to be saying. He's using words like conviction and assurance. So the word translated assurance means literally to support. And so faith is to a Christian what a foundation is to a house. It gives us confidence that we can stand strong. It's our support. Now that doesn't sound like a blind faith or a leap of faith. That seems much more secure. And that's because the source of our confidence is the character and activity of God. He has revealed himself in real time and space. And so we have evidence and proof of God at work in the world. And so faith is not belief in spite of evidence. That would be superstition. No, there is great evidence to trust in the character of God. And so this verse says that faith is what you hope for, but you can't see yet. And so I ask you today, what is it that you're hoping for? What are your hopes for you one day, for you, for this one and only life that you're living? I mean, if money was no object, what would you pursue? After 4 cruises and 90 rounds of golf, then what? Okay? What investment of your life would you and God be proud of? Maybe it has to do with your kids, that they would turn out great and grow up to make a difference in the world. Maybe it's that you could live debt-free and be able to respond generously to needs as you see them. Maybe you're single and you want to end up in a strong Christian marriage. Maybe your dream is to be so close to God that you feel his presence in your life every single day. Maybe you're hoping for a new business or a new relationship or a new ministry. What is the more that you were made for? Faith is the key to closing the gap that exists between the hopes that God's placed in your heart and their fulfillment. All right, look down to verse 6. He says, without faith, it is impossible to please God. For whoever would draw near to God must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who seek him. Wow. I mean, that's a big statement. Without faith, it's impossible to please God. I'd circle that one if you're taking notes. But by drawing near to him in faith, then it says he rewards us. And I think one of the ways that he does this is by involving us in his bigger dreams for our lives. Because this chapter examines example after example of just that. And so in verse 8, we're introduced to the pinnacle example of faith. He's a man named Abraham. He believed God enough to chase down a bigger dream for his life. His story comes back in Genesis 12, where God made a covenant with Abraham saying, you're going to be a great nation. And through you, there will be descendants that are too many to count, who will become a chosen people called Israel. And guess what? That's a bigger dream than Abraham was coming up with on his own. And so as we look at this brief retelling of Abraham's faith, I think we can learn four building blocks for chasing a bigger dream. Grab a pen if you'd like and mark up your Bible as we go. I'd encourage you to do that. So look down at verse 8 of chapter 11. It says, by faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. Here's the first building block. It's that you clarify God's calling. Underline that phrase at the beginning of the verse where it says, obeyed when he was called, and just write, clarify God's calling in the margin. If you go back to Genesis and read about Abraham's life at this moment when he was called, I mean, this dude was living large. Abraham lived in the city of Ur. It's an area of what is now modern day Iraq. He was very wealthy. He lived in a comfortable home in pleasant circumstances. He had a small empire of servants and livestock, all the signs of ancient wealth. Archaeology has discovered that Ur was a prosperous city with lovely homes, beautiful parks, and public buildings. And so God comes in, and his bigger dream for Abraham was to leave all of that and go on an adventure with God. And so just to clarify, when I talk about dreaming bigger, I'm not talking about the American dream here. This is not about a bigger house or a bigger car or a bigger salary. Often God's big dreams for you fly in the face of the American dream. If Abraham had said no to God's calling, his alternative was wealthy comfort. He had a great life. And when God called, he left it all. And he ended up living in tents for the rest of his life. And I wonder what that moment of calling looked like. We're not given too many details about God speaking to him audibly or something like that. It was probably just like today. God gave him a prompting that he just couldn't shake. And he probably had long and sometimes painful conversations with his wife, saying, I just can't shake this idea that this isn't all that God has for us. I think we're made for more. I think we're supposed to pack up and go. I'm not sure, but I think that God is calling us. And God's promptings aren't always as dramatic as this, like pack up and go to another land. Although, ask Pastor Brian and Rachel, sometimes it is this dramatic, okay? But often it's as simple as asking him, God, what's next for me? God, what's next for my family? What's next for my work? What's next for my character? What's next for my ministry? But the question is, are you making time to listen for his answer? Are you tuned in to his voice? You see, one of the reasons that we had great dreams as kids is that we had more time and space to dream. So hopefully you can spend some of your chair time every day dreaming bigger about your life. And then it's very important that when you begin to get a sense of God's calling, that you write it down or you verbalize it, that you put words to what he's saying. There's power to putting words to a dream. There are dozens of times that this has happened to me over the years. One that you might find interesting was about 20 years ago. Grace was in a not so good place. Hundreds of people had left our church. Our staff was divided. Our leadership wasn't trusted. Our elders were a mess. I was a youth pastor at the time. And I was like, I need to get out of here. So I had flown to Denver for a job opportunity, and I came home ready to take it. But when I got home, I had committed to seek God and to do a couple weeks of prayer and fasting before making my final decision. And toward the end of that time, I sensed God telling me that I needed to stay at Grace. And believe me, at that time, staying was the much harder decision. It would have been way easier to leave. Things were a mess. But I remember writing down in one of my old journals the words that I felt God was pressing on me at that time. And they were just this: stay. I have more for you to do here. Now, from an American dream perspective, this doesn't seem like the dream bigger option. Dreaming bigger would have been moving to Denver, a new city, new beginnings, new ministry, new people, all that. But in God's economy, staying and working through the tough stuff for me was a bigger dream. And it was the bigger dream that he had for me. And looking back now, I mean, guys, God is taking our church to places I never dreamed we would go. He's opened up doors for me that I never even imagined. But it started with writing it down, and it started by verbalizing it, first to Kim and then to our elders and to some others who I was close to. Verbalizing what God had called me to. And listen, that clarity, stay, I have more for you to do here. That clarity of calling set in motion the opportunities that I've pursued for the last 20 years of my life. That started a role change to executive pastor. It paved the way for me for us to move to Grub Road. It was the impetus that led me to get my master's degree in theology. It's what led to becoming senior pastor and all of that. There's something powerful about putting words to God's calling and then just saying, I'm going to go do that. And let me also say, there are some times that the dreams aren't going to center on you. For example, there are some of you who your greatest contribution to the world might not be something you do, it might be someone you raise. And God's bigger dream for you is just to pour in and to invest into that other life. And listen, there are some of you whose calling is to attach yourself to another person's bigger dream. Your calling might be to come alongside of them and encourage them and to support them and fund them and see God's work accomplished through them. And that's just as powerful. But the key here is to ask God, what have you called me to do? To clarify that. Why am I here? What's next for me? What's the more I was made for? And then once you've clarified it and identified it, the key is to obey like Abraham did. Well, back to our text. Abraham first clarified God's calling. Now look at the second part of verse 8. It says, and he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith, he went to live in the land of promise as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. So here's the second building block, is to get going even when it doesn't make sense. In Abraham's day, people were born and they would live and they would die in the same place and they would know the same exact people their whole lives. And God says, not you, Abe. You're going to leave all of this and you're going to go to a land. And Abraham says, what land? And God says, the land that I will show you. And God doesn't even give him a whole lot of details at this point. The writer says it plainly right here in our text. He says, not knowing where he was going. A lot of men can relate to this moment. Imagine what this conversation was like between he and his wife, Sarah. It's the only time in history of the human race where when a wife says to her husband, I think we're lost. Are we going the right way? And her husband says, God only knows. That he was actually telling the absolute truth. Okay, so underline the phrase in verse 8 that says, he went out not knowing where he was going, and write, go when it doesn't make sense. Abraham started moving before he had any idea what God was up to. This is true faith. And the movement always begins with little decisions. His first act of faith probably occurred when he started packing the first bag. I mean, him moving was not like you packing for your family vacation. I said earlier, he had a small empire. This was probably multiple dwellings, multiple families, tons of livestock. They were throwing saddlebags over the backs of every animal they could find. The dogs were like, hey, what do I look like, a horse here? This was a major operation, okay? It was more like moving an entire village. And where would they sleep in the desert? And how would they prepare food? And what did they need to bring along? They don't even know where they're going or how long they're going to be there. But I'll bet the first bag was the hardest. You may be saying today, you know, I feel like God's calling me to make some changes at home or to pursue that new position at work or to step into a ministry, but I'm not exactly sure what the finished product looks like. Okay, that's okay. Just get going. Sometimes you discover his purpose in the process of doing something else, but it's important to take a first step. Remember that obedience, that you have to make the decision that says, God, I will just obey you today. You have to obey God for what you know and then trust him for what you don't know. And so if your dream is to have a great marriage, what are you doing today? If your dream is to have greater influence in your profession, what are you doing today to achieve that? If your dream is to reach a group of people with the love of Christ, what are you doing today? Get going, because as Abraham found out, sometimes God only shows us one step at a time. He doesn't give us the big, complete picture. He says, have faith to obey me in this, and then I'll show you what's next after that. Sometimes following this God is like driving a car at night with no headlights, but you got a flashlight. The destination out there is not clear, but God's goal is not to get you to the destination. His goal is that you learn to walk with Him in faith every step of the way. And even if it doesn't make sense, just get going. One of the most famous stories in the Bible starts with these steps of small obedience. Young David was a boy and a shepherd. His older brothers were soldiers in a nearby military outpost, and David's father, Jesse, asks him to take some food and provisions to his brothers. And he does so without question. And through that simple act of obedience, he doesn't know it, but God is preparing and positioning him for a bigger dream. You see, while he was obedient to something that didn't seem to matter, the moment came that would matter more than any other moment in his life. You see, when he arrived with the food for his brothers, he saw them shaking in fear, and he heard the voice in the distance of a giant yelling across a valley. And when he heard it, he did something about it, and he ended up conquering Goliath and saving a nation. But that bigger dream, it started with small obedience. He never would have saved Israel if he hadn't heard Goliath's defiant cry. And he wouldn't have heard the cry unless he had been with his brothers. And he wouldn't have been with his brothers if he had missed the moment of simple obedience to deliver some sandwiches to them for his dad. You see, sometimes God uses small and insignificant assignments to position us and to prepare us to accomplish greater things for Him, even if they don't make sense at first. And so get going. Don't settle for mediocre. The words of the theologian Brian Wilson, "Beware of the lollipop of mediocrity. Lick it once and you'll suck forever." Yep, that's the Beach Boys. All right, here we go. Here's the third building block. It's look forward and not backward. Look forward, not backward. Look at verse 10. He was looking forward to the city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God. By faith, Sarah herself received power to conceive, even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one man, and him as good as dead, were born descendants as many as the stars of heaven and as many as the innumerable grains of sand by the seashore. I can imagine Abraham hearing this verse being read and saying, "Hey, as good as dead. I mean, I made a baby at 100 years old, suckers. Who are you calling good as..." All right. So listen, I love this little aside by the author. In verse 10, I would love you to underline this phrase. He was looking forward, and just write "not backward" in the margin. So imagine the scene for Abraham. His whole caravan traveled from Iraq down to what would be the Promised Land. But it was just a big desert at the time. There was no one there yet. I mean, eventually Moses would lead the people out of slavery and Joshua would lead them into this land. But none of that had happened yet. That was many generations into the future. But Abraham came. He put up his tents in this place because of a promise yet to come, that a great nation would come from his descendants. And it says that even though there was no city, he was looking forward to a city that God would build one day right here on this land. And because they were looking ahead to that promise of a great nation, Abraham and Sarah conceived a child when they were as good as dead, right? Why? Because they knew if this dream of a great nation was ever going to come true, well, it needed to start with at least one child. You can't give birth to a bunch of descendants if you don't start with one. And so they didn't look back at all the reasons why it couldn't happen or why it shouldn't happen. They kept their eyes forward. And many of you today are failing to dream bigger and to look to the future because you're stuck in the past. You're stuck in some deficiencies or some insecurities that you think disqualify you from any future dreams. Some of you are living in your past because it's safe. Maybe God moved you on from a relationship back there or a job back there or even a sin back there. And now you've hit some choppy waters and it's tempting to look back and to long for those things. And they look like a security blanket now. And they fed your ego at the time, or they fed your feelings of self-worth or your false security. And it's very easy to look back and say, "God, I liked it better back there." Some of you battle with anxiety. You're insecure about what you're doing right now. You worry about what people think of you. One bad comment can send you off on a bad trip. There's so many things in your past that could hold you back from chasing down God's bigger dream. Don't let them. Fill your mind and your heart with what God thinks of you. Remind yourself often of the truth about who you are as a child of God. He is the one who will focus you on the future, never on the past. Paul says it this way. He says, "Forgetting what is behind and straining toward what is ahead, I press on toward the prize." Look forward. I love this clip of this little girl coming down a ski jump slope for the first time. Her little voice gives us access to her inner monologue. I want you to listen to her convincing herself to look forward, not backward. Check this out.
I'll be fine.
Have fun.
I'll do it. Well, here goes something, I guess. Okay, you can do this. I'm gonna jump.
You got it.
Whoa, my ski's slipping off.
Just remember, never snowplow, okay?
No snowplows.
Just keep it straight and you'll be fine. Do
okay.
The same thing you do on the 20.
Straight. Do you go faster on the in run?
A little bit.
A little bit?
Yeah.
Is it any steeper, do you think? Not
same,
much.
Same steepness, it's just longer.
Well, just longer. Just longer. Just a bigger 20, that's all.
Yep.
Have fun. It's a bigger 20.
Go ahead.
I got it.
It's fine. You'll be fine.
Okay. Here.
The longer you wait, you'll be more scared.
I go. Just the suspense at the top of the first time freaks you out. That's the only thing. It's so fun.
60?
Huh? 60 seems like nothing now. Whoa!
Isn't that great? Looking forward just means saying the next yes to God. Tuning out the negative voices and then going for it. All right, here's the fourth building block for chasing a bigger dream. It's don't stop dreaming. Listen to verse 13. It says, these all died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. Wow, not exactly the happy ending we were hoping for from this passage, right? Through it all, Abraham and his descendants are described as strangers and foreigners in a distant land, just passing through. He's in that place, and some of you have been there, some of you are there right now, where it seems like this is what God called him to, but when he actually looks around, he's not seeing the results he expected. And it's easy to be discouraged when you get to that place, isn't it? It's easy to doubt God's promises. It's easy to doubt your own ability to hear him. It's easy to start comparing your calling to the next person's. It's easy to fall away. And we can even go to that place where we wonder if God really knows what he's talking about. But I'd love you to underline this phrase here in verse 13 that says, having seen them and greeted them from afar, and just write, don't stop dreaming. I wonder if Abraham ever looked back on his life with regret. If he ever said, I had it made back there, and here we are in tents in a desert, and I'm going to die out here and never see this great nation that I was promised. But I think this little phrase here in verse 13 reminds us that he didn't regret, that he didn't stop dreaming. He kept seeing the promises and was greeting them from afar, as this text says. In other words, God was fulfilling his promise of a great nation. It just didn't happen in Abraham's lifetime. And we have to realize that when God calls us to a bigger dream, it's not for our glory, it's for his glory. And Abraham did his part. So when God calls you to something, you can keep dreaming right until the very end, because bigger dreams bring bigger opposition. And it's important that as you continue to dream, you continue to push that opposition aside at every turn. As soon as you decide to get out of debt, your car is going to break down. When you, you know, decide to step up a little bit more in ministry, you'll get 100 other things competing for your time. As soon as you want to lose weight, it'll be free Twinkie Day at Wegmans or whatever. But no matter what happens, don't stop dreaming. You know, one of our main responsibilities as a church is to help each of you to hear from God and then do what he says. To create an environment where you can discover what God's calling you to next and then encourage you to obey him. Part of our Acts 1:8 vision, our transformed vision, is to help each person at Grace to find your calling, whether that's here inside the church or whether it's in our city or in our world. And so I have two things for you to consider today as next steps. One is for tomorrow and one is to put on your calendar, okay? For tomorrow, identify and write down a bigger dream from God. What is an area of your life where you've become comfortable? Where God is saying, I have more for you there. identify it, and write it down as a first step toward obedience. You're going to be much more likely to do something about it. Now, the second thing for your calendar, we have a Find Your Calling experience on March 3rd, right after our services at all of our locations, the final service at all our locations. I'd love you to head over to our website, whoisgrace.com, right on the main page there, and click the link to register. Now, let me remind you, if you're settling today for less than God's best for you, there's more that you're made for. But moving forward is going to require faith, faith that Jesus is greater, faith that God knows what he's doing. And without faith, remember, it's impossible to please God. So in faith, let's pursue our calling because we're made for more. Let's stand out together and worship him.